Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Shandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
Well, all right, we are going to continue our series called Starting Point. And over the last several weeks, we decided that when we started Compass, we wanted to begin by talking about the starting points of faith. Because the reality is this, everything in our lives has a starting point. You had a starting point. Maybe you were an accident. Maybe your parents had no idea you were coming, but you had a starting point. Everything in life does, including our faith, that system of belief that we have. And maybe for a lot of you guys, that started out, you know, with mom and dad telling you Bible story or a Sunday school class, or maybe just you grew up in high school and your friends told you about, you know, God, and you kind of developed these ideas about who God is and what God is. But what we found is this, is that a lot of times that faith that we started out as a child, those things that we were told, you know, as children in Sunday school or in those simple prayers that our parents told us, that when they were exposed to the rigors of adult life, they just didn't hold up. And so a lot of us said, well, okay, well, that doesn't work, and I'm going to walk away from that. And for some of us on the other side of things said, okay, well, I really still believe this, and so I have to really hold on and try to protect my faith and defend it from the realities of what's happening in the rest of the world. And what happened is that you ended up having a faith that instead of sustaining you, you were constantly trying to sustain it. And so we wanted to talk about some of those things that really, if you were an adult coming to faith for the first time, how would you start? Where would you begin? And so for the last several weeks, we've been talking about that in our Starting Point series. And what I want to encourage you with is this, is that if you've not heard some of these messages, normally I wouldn't even say this, you know, because, you know, I don't want to like say, hey, listen to me because I'm the best speaker in the world. But I would encourage you, this series kind of builds on itself. And so if you haven't heard any of these messages, I would encourage you to go to our website at compassbn.com and just check out what's come before. Or you can go to iTunes and look for Compass Church and you can hear what's built up to this. But today what I want to do is I want to kind of build on all the things we've talked about up till now. We've talked about, you know, the fact that a starting point for faith really begins with the question, who is Jesus? And answering that question for yourself, you know, what does his life mean for me? Who is he to me? And kind of determining that. And then we talked about the reality of how God sees us and how he wants to respond to us. And the fact that, you know, we're not just people who have made mistakes in life, that some of us are people who make mistakes over and over again. And we even make those mistakes on purpose. And so we, you know, really, how do you deal with what we had to define as sin in our lives? And the fact that we, you know, we are sinners. We're not mistakers. We're not just people who have accidents like puppies on the carpet all the time, that, you know, that there's things in our lives that God needs to deal with. And we talked about the fact that God's approach to us is that his arms are open like a father, and that he just wants us to come back to him and just say, hey, God, I want to be back in the family. And he does that. He asks us in. And then last week we talked about how a man named Abraham in the Bible, how his relationship with God was defined as being right, that he was right with God. God considered him cool simply because he trusted God. He didn't earn it. He didn't do anything. It was just a matter of him saying, you know what, God, you promised me something and I believe you're going to do it. And so the reality that a relationship with God is just based on nothing more than us saying, you know what, God, yes, I trust you. And so today what I want to talk about is, and guys, if someone wants to come unplug those lights, I'm going to have a seizure up here while I'm talking. So yeah, you can just come unplug them, anyone who wants to come up. So what I want to do today is I want to talk about something that many of you have been thinking about as we've gone into this series. And this is going to be one of those things that has been in the back of people's minds. You know, we've been talking about grace, talking about the fact that God loves us desperately like a father, and that he welcomes us with open arms. It doesn't matter where we've been or what we've done, that he just wants us in relationship with him. He wants us to know him, and he wants us to know his purposes for our lives. And some of you have been like, yeah, Chris, that's great, but there's one thing that's still kind of bugging me and I'm still struggling with, and that's this. That's what we're going to talk about today. And that is the rules. The rules. I mean, if we were going to be honest, we would say this. All religions are based on rules. All religions have them. It's a set of prescribed behaviors that go along with any belief system. And you know, for some of us, religion is great because, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I want to know God. But the rules have been something that we've struggled with. And I know that there's been people in this room who you've been just waiting for this one. Some of you guys are Christians. You've been Christians for a long time. And you've been waiting for this one because you're like, okay, Chris, you tell them. You tell those people, you know, I've been following the rules my whole life. And, you know, all these people, they say, yeah, I want to know God. I want church. But now they need to know what they need to do, right? So, you know, you need to nail them. Some of you guys are waiting for this because maybe you're seekers and you've been listening over the last several weeks and been like, okay, all this stuff about Jesus and God, that's pretty cool. I can go there with you. But, okay, let's get to the rules thing because that's the breaking point for me. And that's, you know, that's the point at which I know that I'm going to walk away from this starting point of faith thing when the rules come into play. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to talk about the role of rules. How do they fit? What is the role in the relationship of rules to religion? Why are they there? What do they mean for us? You know, how do rules fit in with a God who accepts us exactly as we are and that we can come to him no matter what? What is the deal with rules? I want to preface this by telling you this. Just as a man, as a human being, I'm a person who struggles with rules. I do not like rules. I never have. Rules are just something that are challenging to me, especially arbitrary rules that make no sense whatsoever. So, for example, my yard is covered in grass. I walk in my yard. When I go somewhere, like in Uptown Normal, if there's a sign that says, do not walk on the grass, that does not make sense to me. I'm going to walk through the grass. Some of you guys are like, yes, walk in the grass, right? My wife, on the other hand, my wife will not walk on grass unless I shove her into grass. If there's a sidewalk, she's on the sidewalk. She just can't bring herself to do it because it feels like to her she's just violating the rules. It's so deeply entrenched in her. Rules, I struggle with them. And I didn't struggle with rules any more than when I went to seminary and when I went to Bible college. Because, okay, some of you walking into Compass, you're like, oh, this is a very casual, relaxed place. Let me tell you about my Bible college experience. I graduated high school at 17. I go to this Bible college, and I was just super excited because I just wanted to learn the deep truths of spirituality and deep truths of God, just really understand what the Bible had to say and really understand why do I believe the things I believe. And when I got to Bible college, the first thing I got was not a great explanation of biblical truth. What I got was a book of the rules of the school I was going to. Let me walk you through some of those rules. I could not go to a movie theater to see a movie. I could watch a movie on video, which back then was a VHS cassette. Anyone? VHS? I could watch movies on video, but I could not go see a movie in a theater because seeing a movie in a theater is inappropriate because, you know, they don't know what movie you're seeing. You could be going to see The Lion King, but they don't know that you're not going in to see Basic Instinct. So going to see a movie in the theater is unacceptable for Bible college students. I could not wear jeans to class. We had to wear jeans and dress shoes and button-down shirts. My shirts always had to have a collar. And that was like also the time where the collarless shirts were kind of cool. And that was kind of trendy. So it couldn't even be cool and trendy back then because it didn't have a collar. I'd wear khakis all the time. My wife, for the girls, they could not wear open-toed shoes because apparently female toes are so sexy that it would drive any Bible college male student to just fits of lust. You couldn't wear shorts on campus unless you were going to an athletic activity. That was the only way that you could. The rules were just ridiculous. And so when I was in Bible college, I was in a band because I wanted to be a rock star. I don't even know why I was at Bible college because then I was like, I'm never being a pastor. Pff, that's dumb. I want to play in a rock band. And so that was my thing. And so I played in a band in college. I got called into the dean's office 4 or 5 times because of things related to my band. And there, no joke, there was one time got brought in because we played a concert at a coffee house and a bunch of our Bible college students came and I got called to the dean's office and he's like, hey, I need to talk to you guys about your concert. I had no idea what was going on. It was a little Christian coffee house. And he said, we have a problem. Apparently at your concert the other night, there were some of our students there and apparently they were dancing. And so that's a problem for us because, you know, we have a strict no dancing policy at Bible college. And so I was like, I don't even understand. I mean, it's not like people were busting a move. People are like jumping up and down, do what they do at concerts. And he's like, yeah, I understand. And that's not okay. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. So those are some of the rules I faced. My wife, I don't mean to be like beating up the school I went to. It was a great experience. Okay, but seriously, my wife, Terry worked at Lone Star when she was in high school and when she went to college. And we had to work, you know, to go to school. Terry especially had to work to go to school. And so she worked at Lone Star as a waitress. Her server. And so she gets to school and she had to go to the dean's office to ask permission to work at Lone Star. Because when Terry worked at Lone Star, it was when you could throw peanuts on the floor and when a specific country song would come on over the speakers, all the servers would stop and they would just do a line dance in the middle of the aisles. And so that was Terry. She would have to stop and line dance. And so she had to go to the dean and say, okay, I'm working here and I just need to know that it's okay for me to work here for 2 reasons. One is I'm serving alcohol. You had to have permission to work in a place where you served alcohol. And she danced for people at Lone Star. And so she says, so I just need to make sure it's okay. And the dean, he sits at his desk. He's like, he's like, no joke. He says, what are you wearing while you're dancing at Lone Star? She's like, I mean, these jeans and this shirt. I mean, it's not like Daisy Duke cutoffs and like, you know, tying the shirt off. She's like, just jeans and this shirt. And he's like, he's really thinking hard about this. You can see his mind going, I really want to be able to say no to this because of the rules. And he's like, I can't tell you no. I eat there. So, I mean, I can't tell you can't work there. So that was, I mean, those were rules. Those are rules that Terry and I had to struggle with and face at Bible college. And man, just in my life in general, I struggle with rules. Maybe many of you guys are like me and that just rules are something that you butt up against. And when it comes to religion, when it comes to faith, a lot of times rules can be that stumbling block. Rules can be the thing that make us just go, you know what? Jesus is cool. God is cool. But the rules, I can't go there. And so today I want to talk about the relationship of rules to religion, and specifically as it relates to our starting point in faith. And so what I want to do is I want to kind of dovetail off what we talked about last week. Last week we talked about Abraham. We talked about the fact that God declared Abraham righteous, that God declared Abraham as right with him, in good relationship with him, because God promised him that he was going to give him a son and that Abraham was going to be the father of a bunch of nations. And even though to Abraham that seemed hopeless, it seemed impossible because Abraham's wife was too old to have kids. Abraham, there's just no practical way that it could happen. Abraham said, you know what, God, I trust you. He just said, okay, I trust you. I'm going to believe, God, that you're going to do what you say. And as a result, God said, you're right with me. And so Abraham was good. He didn't earn it. He didn't do anything. There were no rules he followed. There were no rules because there was no Bible. There was none of that stuff. Abraham was right with God because of that relationship of trust. Well, let's fast forward. Abraham has a son. His son has a son. And Abraham's children and grandchildren and great grandchildren reproduce and multiply. And they basically become the nation of Israel. Through a series of events, the nation of Israel, there's a big famine and all of the Israelites end up in Egypt because there's no food anywhere else and Egypt has managed to stockpile food. People of Israel land there to survive the famine and they kind of put down roots there. Generations pass. The Israelites are multiplying again to the Egyptians, multiplying like rabbits. The Israelites are everywhere in Egypt to the point where the Egyptian leadership is like, okay, we got to do something about this or these Israelites, they're going to take over everything. And so they enslave the Israelites in Egypt. If you are a Hebrew or an Israelite, you are enslaved in Egypt. And then Moses pops up on the scene after 400 years of slavery. The Israelites are slaves for 400 years. God raises up Moses, and Moses, you know, he goes to Pharaoh and he says that line that's famous in the movie. Everybody, what does Moses say to Pharaoh? Yeah, I'm sure you can go, let my people go, Pharaoh. Get some coffee in you, people. Come on. So Moses goes to Pharaoh, he says, let my people go. All the plagues happen, all that the horrible things that God sends because Pharaoh says no. And ultimately, Pharaoh says yes. The people of Israel are set free from slavery. 400 years of slavery, they walk free and they're on their own. They're their own nation. They're their own people. And as they leave Egypt, God guides them to Mount Sinai. And history in the Old Testament tells us that was the point at which God gave the law to the Israelites. And when I'm talking about the law, I'm talking about the Ten Commandments. God gives them the Ten Commandments. And here's the deal with the Ten Commandments, right? You can see them up here. Okay, just so you know, like this is like, let's talk about rules for a second. I got this picture off of a blog and the blog post was entitled Scary Pictures. So apparently these Ten Commandments are just something that is terrifying. It's next to like a knife wielding clown or something. So God brings the people of Israel out of slavery. And here's the thing. They've been slaves for 400 years. They've been operating under a system of rules, a system of guidelines as slaves for 400 years. They don't know anything else. Their life of slavery is all they've known for generations. And now all of a sudden they're free people and they're brought out. And not only they're brought out, they're brought out in relationship with a God that they don't even really know. You know, 400 years in Egypt, they've not been worshiping God, the God of the Old Testament, the God of creation. I mean, they've been subject to Egyptian gods. You know, what they know about their history are stories that they've passed down from parent to children about Father Abraham and how God promised Father Abraham that they would be a mighty nation. And I'm sure when they're telling their stories, you know, you got the kid in the back. He's like, okay, Grandpa, wait a second. Did you say that God said he would make us a father of nations? Well, yeah, yes, Junior, that's what God told Abraham, the father of many nations. Okay, Grandpa, you know that we're slaves, right? Well, yes, I know we're slaves, but that's what God told Father Abraham. That's where they came from. Now all of a sudden they're free. Their whole system of governance, of living life is gone. And so what God does is he gathers them together and he gives them a series of laws so that they could basically know how to live in relationship to themselves, how to live in relationship with each other, and how to live in relationship with God. And here's what's interesting about the Ten Commandments that God gives to you, right? The deal of the Ten Commandments is this. Nobody knows more than two or three, right? Like, if I didn't have that up there, you'd be like, okay, I know it starts with thou shalt not, right? Here's something else that's funny, too, is like, I don't use a King James translation of the Bible. I use the New Living Translation. And so all of, like, thous and these, I don't read those when I'm typically reading the Bible anymore. But the Ten Commandments are always thou shalt not, right? It's always a thou with the Ten Commandments. That's just how it is, because it's the rules. So God lays down these rules, and you can see them up on the screen right there. You know, I'm the Lord your God. You shouldn't have any other gods before me. Don't have any idols. Don't take my name in vain. And, you know, don't lie, don't murder, don't covet. All of these things that you know, we're fairly familiar with, that God gives to the people of Israel to show them how to live. And here's the deal we got to understand as it relates to rules. And specifically, you know, the Ten Commandments kind of illustrate this. Anytime there are rules, anytime there's a system of rules, that indicates that there's relationship. Rules can only come from some sort of relationship, typically some sort of authority. You know, there's a couple models. Think about like club rules, right? You know, the club model of rules is this. It's that if you want to be part of our club, then you have to agree to follow the set rules. Once you follow those rules, you can be part of the club. And if you don't follow those rules, then you are out. You know, you rules get you in, and then violating the rules kicks you out. That was Terry and I at Bible college. I was almost kicked out because we played concerts in places we shouldn't have played concerts. And so that violation of rules, it can kick you out, but following the rules, trying to like do your best to be part of it, it can get you into the club. You know, it's like the union model. You pay your dues, you do what you're supposed to, then you're good with the union. If you don't pay your dues and you know, you're violating union principles, they're going to kick you out of that sucker. It's the club model of rules. There's another model. It's the homeowner association model. Anybody in a homeowners association? Okay, any of you who raised your hand, how many of you hate your homeowners association? Some of you guys are like, I'm on the board of my homeowners association. Homeowners association is this model. You buy your house, it's yours, you own it. No one can tell you that it's not yours or that you have to stay or that you have to go. But there are these kind of like rules that everyone just kind of agrees to. And if you don't follow those rules, they can't kick you out. They can't make you leave, but they can express their displeasure to you. So, you know, if you have a homeowner association and you got a trampoline in your backyard, you know, you're going to get a nasty letter from the homeowner association saying, hey, we don't allow trampolines in this neighborhood. You can't have it. You can keep that trampoline all you want. You know, you may get a summons to court, or you may just keep getting nasty letters in the mail and your neighbors may give you dirty looks. They can't make you leave because you're in, you know, you're part of the club, but they can make your life miserable. They can make it kind of miserable to be in that club. They can let you know how displeased they are with you and how much they don't like you. And many of us see a relationship with God and a relationship to rules with God as one of those two things, right? The club model. You know, okay, if I can just follow all 10 of these commandments, then I'm good with God. Okay, I've got 8 of them. There's just these two that I can't quite get. And if I'm going to get in the club, I got to be able to do all this. And then it can reach a point where it's like, well, this is stupid because I'm never going to be able to do all 10 of those things. I'm never going to be able to follow all those rules. So I'm never going to be able to get in the club. So, you know, why even bother? Or maybe you feel like you're in the club, but you're just always on pins and needles. You're always feeling guilty because of all the things that you've blown. And you're like, oh my gosh, if I just blow this one more time. If I screw this up again, then God's going to kick me out of the club and I'm not going to belong. Or maybe, you know, the other side of things, maybe you see relationship with God or the church as, you know, the homeowners association. And you're like, well, okay, you know what, we're all just, you know, we're all humanity. We're all part of mankind. And I would even be willing to say that there's a God out there and that maybe he made us. And so, you know, God can't really kick us out of humanity. I don't think there's a hell. I think everyone's just going to go to heaven for eternity. And so, I think that that's just how God made it. But you believe that God can still be pretty ticked at you, right? You believe, hey, I'm in because I'm a human, I'm part of mankind, but, you know, I pretty much believe that God thinks I suck. You know what I'm saying? God is not happy with me, and he's going to be firing off his letters of displeasure to me every now and then because he just wants me to know how displeased he is with me. Even though he can't kick me out of the club, he wants me to know, you know, how frustrated and angry he is with me. We see faith in God often as part of those things. And the rules are things that either allow us into the club, the rules are things that will get us kicked out of the club, or the rules are things that are going to push us to the side and keep us on the outs as far as those things go. So what I want to do is I want to take a look at Exodus chapter 20, just to the first couple of verses. Right before God gives the Ten Commandments, right before he gives these laws for how he wants the Israelites to live in relationship to each other and relationship with him, this whole passage starts out with this. It says that then God gave the people all of these instructions, talking about what's going to come next, the Ten Commandments. And he says this, I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery. So before he gives the Ten Commandments, God says this. He says, look, I am the Lord your God. I rescued you from the land of Egypt. I rescued you from slavery, and I brought you out. There's a couple things before we continue that we got to get out of this, and we got to understand as it relates to God and rules. And the first thing is this, is that when God's talking to the Israelites, before he gives these rules to them for how to live, he defines his relationship to them. He says, I am the Lord your God. I am your God. Here's the thing. The Israelites, they hadn't done anything to become God's people. There were no rules that they followed. They didn't have any rules. They didn't do anything right. You know, they hadn't earned it. They hadn't called on God's name to do anything for them. They had not said, God, we pledge our lives to you. God just said, I'm your God. You're my people. And you know why? Because I said it. Because I'm just claiming you. God claimed these people. He just said, you're mine. And the other thing that we want to get out of this is God, he reminds them of the fact that not only are you mine, but I brought you out of slavery. I did that. I gave that to you. You didn't do it. You didn't earn it. There was no reason that you deserved this. I did it because I'm your God, and I just wanted to do something for you. You are mine. You belong to me. And here's really what God is telling the Israelites. He's telling them that it's not the club model, and it's not the homeowners association model I'm trying to bring you into. He says, I'm bringing you into a family model. Now, the family model of rules is this, is that when you are part of a family, you're in because you're family. You know, my kids are in my family because they are my kids. They have my DNA. They have my name. They are in my family. And so as my kids, as being part of my family, we have certain rules and expectations that are there for people who are in our family. Thing is, I can't apply those rules to other children. Anybody love to be able to apply your rules to some other kids? Right? The kid at the grocery store. He said, Mom, I want it. No, sweetheart, it's okay. And you just, make my spanking hand twitch. And, you know, but we can't do it. And why can't we do it? Because our rules don't apply to them because they're not in the family. And here's the thing. My kids could break every one of my rules every day of their lives. And they are still in my family. The reason the family model of rules exists is for people who belong. You're in. And because you're in, this is how we live in our family. This is how we can connect with each other. This is how we as a family are going to navigate through life. It's the family model. And it's a different relationship because the family model is not based on what we do. My kids can't earn entry into my family. Your kids can't earn entry into my family. Thank God, because I'm feeding too many mouths as it is. But it's not based on what we do. And that's what God's model, that's what God's telling the people of Israel. It's not based on what we do to him, this relationship we have with him, the relationship we walk into when we say, I want to be part of your family. It's a family model because it's based on who God says we are. And with the people of Israel, God looked at them and he said, I am the Lord your God. He's saying, you are mine. You are my family. And I'm going to ascribe to you everything that I would ascribe to my own children. And see, God defines the relationship. He says, we're family. And then after he defines it, he gives the rules for us both as a confirmation that we're part of the family and also to show us how to best live in this new relationship with God and each other. So a lot of us look at these, you know, the Ten Commandments or whatever, the scary picture, and we think, oh man, those are the rules, and God's a sledgehammer, and he's wanting to come down on us. When the fact of the matter is, for the people of Israel, who came out of a life of slavery, didn't know how to live in the real world, didn't know, because they'd always just been slaves. Everything that they'd been told to do, they did. The way they'd been told to live, they lived. And now they're free, and God's looking at this mess of people who don't know how to relate to each other and don't know how to relate to him. And he says, look, okay, you're my family. I've got to show you how to live. And not only that, he gave them that as a confirmation, saying, look, these things should prove to you that you belong to me. That you belong with me. They're not rules to crush you or to bind you. They're rules to show you how special you are to me and how much I love you. The thing about the Ten Commandments, I mean, I'm going to read through them real quick. The thing is this, the rules are all based on relationship. The first three, I'm the Lord your God. There shall bring no false idols before me. And don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Those three things, they all help to define how we should relate to God. They're not about do this or get punished. They're saying, this is how you relate to me as God. They're about relationship. The fourth one, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Really, I love that one because that's about our relationship with ourselves. God's saying, look, you need to take care of yourself. You need to take one day to rest and just allow me to pour into your life and bless you. And then all the ones after that, they're about our relationships with other people. Honor your parents. Don't kill anybody. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't covet your neighbor's stuff. Especially don't covet your neighbor's wife. Those things are all based on relationship. If you follow those things, you don't get a gold star. If you follow those things, your relationship with people and with God should be good. And so God gives these rules not to punish people or not to make people feel pressured, but because it's about relationship. And here's the thing I want to make sure everybody gets as it relates to rules in religion, particularly in rules as it relates to starting point with Jesus. It's that relationship always precedes rules. Always. With God, the relationship is always going to come before the rules. And how the rules apply in your life is in direct proportion to your relationship with God. The way the rules that God lays out apply in your life are directly proportional to your relationship with Him. And there's a passage in Galatians chapter 4 that illustrates this. I'm going to read this to you. This is written, you know, thousands of years after the events of God giving the Ten Commandments and the Apostle Paul. He's a missionary. He's telling people about Jesus. He writes this down and he's elaborating. And he says this. He says, that's the way it was with us before Christ came. We were like children. We were slaves to the basic spiritual principles of this world. So here's what Paul's saying is that, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we talked about sin. Jesus said it himself, is that anyone who sins is a slave to sin, which is us. It's me, it's you, anyone. And the Apostle Paul is writing this, and he's saying that before we came to right relationship with God through Jesus, we were slaves. We were slaves to the spiritual principles and the spiritual laws of this world. And in a lot of ways, we were like the Israelites. We were slaves in a foreign nation for 400 years. And the rules that hang over you when you're slaves, what are those rules for? Those are rules to punish. Those are rules to keep you in line. The rules for slaves are hard. And then Paul continues on and he says this. But when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. Talking about Jesus, says God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children. This is crazy. I mean, okay, anybody watch Django? Okay, I just want to set the stage. Like, God's talking about slavery, right? He says this, that God sent his son to buy us out of slavery. And not only to buy us out of slavery to set us free, but to buy us out of slavery and then to adopt us into his family as his own children. Imagine that. Imagine buying a slave out and then saying, not only that, I'm just going to bring you into my family. Imagine a slave in a field and the master just saying, hey, I want you to come in here. You know, he thinks he's going to get whipped. He thinks he's done something wrong. And his owner says this. He says, hey, you are free. You are no longer a slave. I mean, he'd be like, okay, sweet. I'm out. You know, give me $50 and a bus ticket and I'm going to make something. But then he goes on and he says this. He says, not only are you free, I want to adopt you into my family. I want to make you mine. The rules that applied to you and you were a slave, those don't matter anymore. Those don't even exist for you anymore because you're not a slave. Now you're a son. You're my son. Paul continues on and he writes this and he says, because we are his children, because now we're his children, God has sent the spirit of his son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, Father. And now you are no longer a slave, but God's own child. And since you're his child, God's made you his heir. See, the Israelites lived as slaves for 400 years. For generations, they were slaves. And it was 400 years before God freed them and he declared them his. And he didn't declare them his for anything that they'd done, but simply because he called them family. He called them his sons and his daughters. And God's giving us the same opportunity today. See, I would venture to say that there's some of us in this room and you have lived a life looking at religious rules, and you've been living under those rules as a slave. And you have felt that if you don't follow those rules, that a whip across the back is the next thing that's going to hit you. Because that's what those rules are for. They're designed to keep you in line. They're designed to control you, to control the way you live. And so for you, religion is this cruel slave-owning master trying to keep you in line and force you to live the way that he wants you to live. And that's how you have lived. Ten Commandments are scary to you. They belong in scary pictures because that's what they are. They're cruel. They're hard. They're mean. And God's message to you is this: that's not what it is. See, Jesus said that everyone who sins is a slave to sin. That's you, that's me, that's your mom. Every single one of us are or have been slaves at one point in our lives. But what God has done is God has given us the opportunity to free ourselves from the chains and to walk into his family. And what's so amazing about it is this, is that the way that happens is God says, trust me. You don't have to follow the rules to get into the club. You don't have to hit all 10 of those things in order to be welcomed into God's arms. Do you know why? It's because God's already called you his child. You're his. He wants relationship with you. He wants you to know him. And he wants to set you free from the weight and the bondage of slavery that's held you back for so long. We're going to wrap up. I'd like everybody to just bow your heads and close your eyes for just a moment. What I want to do is this, is I know that right now that talking about the rules, that man, you may be in this room and the rules have been the breaking point for you as it comes to relationship with God. The rules are the thing that make it so that you can't come to him, that you don't want anything to do with him. And you know, you have felt like a slave. Maybe you were raised in a church environment that was slavery. And all you wanted to do was get free. And once you got free, you swore you would never go back because you're not putting those chains back on. And can I tell you, God doesn't want to put you in chains. God wants to put you in your own room. Because he doesn't want you to be a slave. He wants you to be his son. He wants you to be his daughter. The rules, the guidelines that he gives us in order to live, they're not about punishing us. They're not about hurting us. They're about the fact that he loves us and he wants what's best for us. So this morning you're hearing the heart of God and you know this, that there's something speaking in your heart and saying, I want that. I want to be a son or a daughter. I don't want to be a slave anymore. I don't want to feel the guilt or the shame of these rules that are pressing down on me. Instead, I want to know that I'm good with God no matter what I do. And then whatever comes after that, God can deal with. Because once I'm a child, once I'm his son or daughter, I'm in. And this morning, if you want to be God's son, God's daughter, the invitation is open. It's there. And all you have to do is put down the tools of your slavery, take off your chains, and walk into his house. And if that's you this morning, if you're ready to say, Chris, I'm tired of being a slave. I want to be part of God's family. I want to walk into this relationship with him. I want to pray with you. And if that's you, just as a sign of your commitment and your faith, saying, you know what, God, I trust you. I don't want to do this. Just right now, I want to pray with you. I'd like to just slip your hand up right now if that's you. Thank you. I'm tired of being a slave. I want to be part of God's family. Thank you. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for what you're doing in our hearts and our lives this morning. And I thank you that you're speaking to us about the reality of relationship with you and what it means. That it's not about trying to follow a set of prescribed rules so that we can please you or make you happy, but that you already love us as a father and that you want what's best for us. God, I pray this more than anything else. I pray that for every heart in this room that you would help us to have a clean and clear understanding of how you want us to relate to you and what you want to do in our lives. And God, I pray this, Lord. I pray that as we move into what you've laid out for us in our lives, that you would begin to repair those relationships. God, that if there are damaged relationships with family, with friends, things that need to be repaired, God, I pray that you would put those things back together, even as you're putting our relationship with you together. And for those who've lifted their hands today to say, God, I want to be part of your family, God, with them, I pray this, God, we confess that we're not perfect. We confess that we are sinners. And God, we confess that we need you. And Lord, this morning, our prayer is this, is that you would become our Lord, that you would become our Father. Not about rules, not about changing how we live so that we can just behave, but changing who we are so that we can belong in the family of God. Jesus, we love you and we thank you for this freedom that only comes from you. And we pray all of this in your name, Lord. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.